On the cover is a dark room. In the corners, cobwebs hang from the dusty ceiling. Crates and boxes are stacked all over, cloths loosely tossed over them. In the center of the page, under the light of a single, uncovered bulb, a crate has had the cloth pulled off of it, revealing the worn but familiar Falcon logo.
Are you seeking thrilling tales of adventure and superheroics? Do you crave the weekly drama of teenage hijinks and high school angst? Then don't miss the next issue of These Protean City Comics. This issue featuring
Wind Shear, full of hot air and out of time.
I'm John Hobb, and I'm just a kid.
Now, with our heroes assembled, let's turn the page on this issue of Protean City Comics.
This is Protean City Comics, issue number 86, Old Friends.
We last left our heroes in an underground warehouse storage room type thing in the Bash, where they have just met the original Striped Eagle, Patricia Arden. And she has just sort of revealed to Ramon that she knows him. Like, she knows current Ramon, who's standing in front of her.
Yeah. I think Ramon pauses for a minute and kind of like lowers his head and then looks back up and appears at her. After the last issue, they started like picking up a couple of like, oh, we're going to work out how to actually do this mask. And so like it has like eyes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's not like full on Spider-Man style moving all over the place, but just like a little bit of narrowing. And he asks, how could this be? How are you? Are you the one I know?
Yeah. Yes. That's a good question, and why I wanted to talk to you. So, after you left, I got sucked into a crack, and I didn't have time to grab onto my kids, and I didn't have time to scream even. I just got pulled backwards into this, like, nothingness. And I floated for a little while, and then I ended up here. I've been here about a year now.
And have you done anything? Have you made any steps towards getting closer? Have you made an effort? Have you connected with anyone who's anywhere close to bringing us back?
And she can see how upset you are, and, like, that totally makes sense. Even with the mask on, your voice is giving you away that, you know, you're angry and upset, and, you know, she knew you pretty well when you were a kid. So she's going to say, I know you're upset, and I'm sorry that I haven't contacted you sooner. I tried. I contacted your friend Alina, is it? A few times looking for you, but I never got an answer, so I just figured you didn't want to be found. I have been working, but at this point, I've exhausted all the resources I have, and I feel like it's time to work together to get what I think we both want, which is to fix this. I'm assuming that's what you want.
He's been, like, standing in, like, a really, like chest-forward, aggressive sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And his shoulders just slump a little bit because he had kind of just been hoping that she would have the solution now. Because, like, when he was in his own world, he was much less, like, he was very new at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, having this person that's supposed to figure this stuff out is, like, just saying that they've got nothing is just, like, I don't think quite powerful blow, because he's always, he knows that it's lost. This doesn't bring him back any.
Yeah. You were hoping for more from her, because that was the figure she was in your world.
Yeah,
I get that. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Ramon. I have been doing stuff, and I have found some answers, but not all of them. And I'm hoping that with your resources and the things that you've gathered in the past year, maybe together we can make something happen.
Yeah, we'll put the things together and work it out.
At this point, the man behind her has sort of taken off his like outer coat and stuff like that. He's not holding fire anymore because it's not necessary in this room. And you can see his face a little clearer. He's kind of got dark skin and like large, dark brown eyes that look sort of familiar. And you start to recognize this person.
He like looks at the man and his head kind of cocks to the side a little bit. And he goes, "And who are you?"
"I go by Diablo."
No. Listen, Matchstick, I'm not asking for fake names. Who are you?"
"All right, kid. My name is Ignacio. Ignacio Castillo."
And Ramon nods and goes, "You my Ignacio Castillo?"
"Not quite." Which you start to piece together, because you saw Raquel and Ignacio not make it through a loop. You know, kind of intuitively, that this isn't him, but I'm sure that's your hope anyway. So this is the Protean City universe version of what would have been your son. He is in his late 60s.
The guy that I've been like spying on occasionally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why you sort of recognize him, but you've never like interacted with him.
Yeah.
But yeah. So he is a fire empath, and he can he can create fire anywhere that there's air. So in a vacuum, he could not. But
it's genetics.
Yeah. So no, he's not your Ignacio. And he says, "Not quite. I'm from here. But I hear if things had worked out differently, I might have known you. So I figured I'd help."
He gives a bit of a shrug and says, "I'd like to think that I would have been a better dad to you than I know you had."
"Oh, I never had a dad. I don't know my dad. I had a mom. She died a couple years back."
"Yeah, I know. I'm sorry about that."
"Thanks." And he's just gonna like kind of bite his lower lip and just sort of he's not interested in being the center of attention. He's kind of there as the muscle. He's not trying to be involved with you.
So listen, have you got a lead? Have you got something for us? Or was this just to kind of make connections and see if something comes up later?
I do. I have something, but it's not useful without the other thing. So I'll just lay it all out. And she's going to take out like a binder and put it on the desk. She said, "This is everything that I found. It's not much, but I understand now how to help with some of it. I feel like there were two people responsible for what happened to us, and I can't tell which is the more important one to focus on. There was this man in a suit."
"The End."
"Right. And I feel like he was part of it. And I have some information about him. However, there was also this person. I don't know much about them, but I think they go by Fracture. And..."
"Yeah. We've met."
"I feel like they started it. I feel like it's their fault. Do you know anything about... You've met?" Are you friends? And she's starting to get upset because she really blames Fracture for this whole thing. Like, the end to her is a tool of Fracture's.
Friends, we've met.
John is standing, like, leaning against the wall in this room, just sweating so much as soon as she said, we think there are two people involved. And he was like, no, it can't be me. Can't be me. And then she says that she describes the end. He's like, all right, okay, 50-50. Can't be me. No. I can't. They don't think I'm responsible for any. And then she describes Fracture. And he's like, all right. In his head, that's what he's thinking. He's just like, no, I don't think. Fracture kind of does the other thing. Like, they're there to just, like, help people. Like, they help me. They helped Ramon. They tried to stop me.
Right, so they're not involved then.
Did you say it doesn't involve them? It does. I watched them take selective people to freedom and safety, and not the rest. It felt very intentional, and I'm sure that they were involved.
Yeah.
But in any case...
Listen, if John says they're not involved, they're not involved.
Ooh, calm down, buddy. I mean, Fracture was involved in the way that I was involved, in that I was there, and... I couldn't do anything.
Yeah, I get it. I just don't want to waste my time chasing false leads. Listen, I trust you. I know that you're not going to just say that Fracture isn't the one involved in it if they could be. So, you're confident?
You're talking to John?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean...
You trust them?
Yeah, yeah. In the moment when I needed people the most to help me with, like, and then any kind of, like, eyes, the other people, you know, my thing, they showed up to help. And they had, like...
The Fracture's gold in my book.
They definitely are weird. They do stuff outside of our time and universe and stuff, but I don't think they're definitely not a force... Of like evil.
If anything, that sounds like an ally.
Fine, you know. Whatever the case may be, they were involved, but maybe they're not the cause that we need to be targeting in order to fix this. Now, I don't have anything in that world anymore. I would like to get my kids here. And I don't know what your intention is, and frankly, I don't care. But I know we both want people that were left there.
Yeah.
The only information I've found out is that the only way to get to the man in the suit is to stop him before he gets there. Because once he's there, we can't touch him. I don't...
All right.
I have not made any strides in getting back to that time. But I'm hoping with your connection with the university and your friends, and you had a friend that did time stuff, and I'm not sure who that was or if they're available, but I'm hoping maybe you have a way to get back. Because if we can get back to before he gets there, we might have a shot.
Are you suggesting sealing him out or stopping him from where he... stopping him at home?
I think the latter. As I understand it, he had some sort of device, a countdown of some kind.
Yeah.
That's the source of the ending. And if we can get to that before it manifests and starts to count, that's how we fix this. Any leads, John? Any information that you would like to share?
Nope.
Great.
So Ramon puts his hand on the desk and says, it was good to see you, Ms. Arden. If we figure out a way, We'll let you know. But your research has gotten us nothing. You're telling us the bad guy we always knew, and you're telling us one of our friends is on his side, and they're not. And
listen, I believe you. I hear you.
So do you have anything else? Do you have other things? Do you have a leading point? Do you have an idea of where the end is? Or are you just going to tell us, hey, we have to find an impossible place, and that's the only way to stop it? Because if that's what you've got, great. We've got work to do then.
I'm saying, I know the place. I don't know how to get there. Now, I understand the city has a lot of different kinds of assets and useful people. I've lost all connection to them when I lost Falcon. I've been hiding out. I don't have the clout anymore to go around asking for scientific advancements and experimental chances. But maybe you do, or maybe you know someone who does. So I figured I'd give you what I had. I'm not trying to dangle something in front of you that's unattainable. I'm trying to share information in hopes that, in collaborating, we can get our families back. But if you're not interested, that's fine. I'll continue by myself. And she puts her hand on the binder and starts to, like, pull it back to her.
Oh, he's gonna grab the binder.
Great.
And, I think take it from her.
That's fine. She meant for you to have it. She's gonna let you take it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I know that he got manipulated into taking it. I know this.
I know Brandon knows.
And you
knows.
Know this. Ramon does not know this. He feels like he just won.
And she's going to let him think that. That's fine. She'll just throw her hands up and be like, fine. I'm trying to work with you.
How can I contact you when we figure it out?
And she's going to reach in her desk and take out, like, a disposable old flip phone and, like, throw it to him. It's not current tech, but it's older. It's like got that green screen with the buttons you have to push multiple times to text, but you can call her on that.
Yeah.
Here.
And
you know where to find me. I'm here. Ignacio's here most of the time as well.
He nods and looks to John, kind of like just gestures back towards the elevator.
John is going to nod and say, yeah, why don't you and Matchstick here head out? I just want to talk to Mrs. Eagle here for a second. I'll be right out. You'll be fine.
Yeah, sure. And he turns and walks awkwardly with his not son to the elevator.
Yeah, and you've been, like, harassing Ignacio since you got here, so he's, not interested in talking to this punk kid.
That's fair.
What can I help you with?
John.
Mr.
Hob.
Mr. Hob.
You can call me John. John. And he turns around and turns back to face her, and he just has, like he has gone, like his face is pale, and you can see that there's like there's a panel that cuts in on his like a close up of his face, and there is fear in his eyes. Look, I know that you're like him, that you're from the other place, and that you lost things, and that whole situation sucks. But and I'm here if our plan is to find the thing that killed your world, then fine. I'm here to help shut that down because losing your world is a tragedy. But if your plan is to bring people from that world here, then you just need to think about the repercussions of that, because that could be putting them in danger. It could be putting you in danger. There are people out there who don't like it when you muck around with time. And you need to be thinking about that kind of stuff because it's serious. And I don't know that you are. And like, you just need to think about the things that you're doing. And I think that you're not making that decision Clearly, and like I said, if we're like, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna go with Ramon, and we're gonna figure out how to destroy this thing, and we're gonna prevent your world from ending. But just please, please, if you just think about what you're doing and think about what you do while you're here, because you are not supposed to be here. You're not from this timeline, and that can cause problems.
I appreciate your concern. And I would like to impress upon you that I have given this years of thought. I have done my due diligence. I have made promises to people in this world that I would stay and fulfill things that they were not able to. But if I have the chance to rescue my children, I'm going to do that. There's no one here that is their opposite. There's no grown Ignacio version of my two kids. They're gone. I need them back.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. I get that you've been here in this bunker for a year thinking about this. And all I'm saying is maybe you don't have the whole picture. And just remind me, what is she wearing? Is she wearing any kind of like, is she wearing a Falcon uniform? Is she wearing a striped eagle uniform? Does she have the logo anywhere on her?
Nope. She's just wearing like a red kind of dress suit outfit, like a politician would have worn. She's kept and maintained her polished persona, but she doesn't go anywhere. But she's trying to hold on to that persona.
And he is just going to kind of lean across this desk and just kind of like point at her and say, "You're the striped eagle. You're supposed to be the best of us. When I was a kid, I looked up to you, and you're supposed to be the person who thinks about everything and has a contingency plan for any emergency. And if you bring..."
And what makes you think that I don't?
Because. And he kind of stops, and that really like... Because I know that you haven't, because I can't... And he just turns and like kicks the desk. And he's just gonna leave.
Oh, okay. So you're gonna walk outside, and we're gonna cut to the exterior of the building where Ignacio is smoking a cigarette that he lit and sort of just standing awkwardly, I imagine, near Ramon. Have you attempted to speak to him out there? Like, what's our scene of these two men outside?
I don't think Ramon has any idea what to say.
Fair.
There's no good way to apologize for his alternate self. Oh, actually, there's a small thing.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of is standing there, and he looks to Ignacio and he says, "So listen, I've been your me's been a real asshole.
Yeah, I guess.
And I'm kind of trying to decide whether or not I should kick his ass for it.
Mm.
So if you want me to, I could beat him up for you."
And he's going to like take one last drag off his cigarette and flick it and extinguish the flame as soon as it hits the ground. So it's out, but he throws it. And he looks at you, and he's maybe a head taller than you. And he's going to look to you and say, "Listen, kid, I appreciate the sentiment. I can do my own ass kicking, but you enjoy." And he's just going to walk away.
Out into the night or past into the facility?
Just out. Okay. Past him out into the night. He's going to stick his hands in his pockets, and he's just going home.
And as John comes up, Ramon is just like looking after him and goes, "That stick turned out okay." "Not great, but like, okay. Still gonna kick Windshear's ass, though."
Perfect. And we're gonna turn the page. we see a panel of Dynamite Jack's diner, and he's got the great neon sign glowing because it's late at night, but of course it's a 24-hour diner. The clientele of this diner in the evening is much different than it is during the day. During the day, it's a lot of teenagers and school kids and like families. And at night, it's the people that are out at night. So there's a lot of hoods up, covered eyes. You're not the only person in a costume. But you head in and like grab your booth in the back, and Jack is going to come over. Jack works 24 hours. I don't think he ever sleeps.
John has and his stuff now. He's not to hide his own identity, but because he's embarrassed about what Ramon is wearing.
Cool. So you're going to walk to your booth and have a seat, and he's going to come up to you and be like, "What'll it be, boys? Milkshakes?
Yeah, and some fries.
You got it."
And Ramon kind of like looks up at Jack as he's leaving and goes, "I don't think I can have a milkshake."
"I got you." And he just walks away.
"Thanks, Jack."
You could just take...
Oh, that sucks.
You could just take the mask off and have a milkshake.
"I can't take the mask off."
Yeah. All right. I mean, all right. Fine.
He's going to come back with a tray of fries, like a big thing of fries for you guys, because he takes care of you. He hands John a milkshake. It's in the regular like glass with the regular straw. Hands it over to you. And Ramon's comes over, and it's in a regular like cup, and it's got this straw that has sort of a cardboard thing. Like, clearly it was flat cardboard that was folded and like pinched together to make a child's play mask. It's like a superhero mask for children, but it's stuck on the top of a straw so that if you move...
So I could like raise part of my mask
and put the fake mask over and put the straw in your mouth. And it says like Protean City Heroes on it or something in like bright kid letters. Here you go.
Ramon looks at it and like looks up to Jack.
And Jack
and
is
his
like
shoulders
snickering.
Just kind of slump.
And he's just sort of giggling, and he like kind of walks away.
He immediately pushes the milkshake to the side.
Aw.
Yeah, he's not doing that.
John is just going to take he's going to grab his milkshake and take a huge drink from it and just be like, milkshake is so good.
So you have the binder.
Yeah.
And you have this information.
Ramon's just kind of like flipping through it, looking to see like if there's anything he can glean from it quickly. Mm-hmm. Obviously he's going to obsessively pore over it and nail it to his wall later tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But for now he's just kind of looking through it and going, who do we know who knows like teleportational dimensional stuff? We've got
maybe Dr. Amari.
Amari does some time things, but it's the wrong kind of time.
Really, she'd be my bet. Maybe Dr. Morris might have something. She might have made a gadget. I mean,
worth checking out. I could see it. Maybe most of these numbers don't make sense to me. I know my way around, like, you know, accounting, but this is so far above me.
I mean, like,
yeah, there's a whole like file folder inside the binder of just what looks like digital code. It's just numbers and slashes and dots and like long pages of code that normal people would not be able to decipher.
I mean, how far do we need to go? Does it say? Because I mean, it's not like her typical thing, but Sage does magic. Okay. I don't know. I've never seen her open a portal before, but I mean, maybe.
But I mean, you could open portals before, and you've got magic.
Not so much anymore. A lot of that.
No, I just mean like before, like your, because you've got the magic. You do.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
Did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not trying.
No, it's fine. It is what it is. Found. Yeah. It's fine. But I can't open portals anymore.
Yeah, but. I mean, that's not what matters. You go out there on the front line and you fight and you work. Like, I mean, I dragged you all around today. I had you steal things from a hospital.
Your things.
My things.
I didn't steal anything. I just walked around. I did stuff. Like, you're my friend. That's fine.
And your black eyes are starting to fade, but you're still definitely wearing your nose splint.
And if I don't...
I appreciate it.
Yeah. And if I don't have powers, then I can't... Whatever. That's fine. It's why you've got to be Windshear. It's why you've got to be the hero. Because I can't anymore.
Is that a label shift? You've got to be Windshear. You've got to be the hero.
Yeah, I think I might be trying to raise your savior and lower your freak.
Okay.
Because I'm saying you got to go out and be the hero.
I respect the hell out of John's stuff. I'm going to be accepting that shift as well.
Nice. This bromance is having a very positive influence on you, Ramon.
Yeah. I am shifting him more towards the way I see myself, which is also very interesting.
Ramon just like looks down and says, "No, you're right, but I can't be Windshear anymore. That's someone different. That's why I got the new costume. That's why I'm wearing it and living it. I gotta be something different. What do you think of Crosswind?"
Sounds, like you're angry, like you're cross. Or.
And he kind of like stops for a second and goes, "Yeah, I am." And he grabs a handful of fries and like walks out of Jack's. And like waves the fries up over his head as he's walking out and goes like, "Let's go talk to the doctor."
Great. And just to clarify, which doctor are we going to talk to?
Ugh.
You named two.
Yeah. I think we would go see Amari, who's my friend.
I feel like Amari. Yeah.
Okay.
Because
you two
Amari
are close.
And I are close. I would also, of course, leave cash.
Right. Because Jack, as soon as he watches Crosswind walk out, he looks kind of to you like, you're paying for this, right? Yeah.
John always pays.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. He has reasonably wealthy parents. He always pays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's at the university?
Yes.
So
I mean, it's also like nighttime.
It's the middle of the night.
But
so
let's be honest,
are you guys...
She's there working.
Of course she's there. But
is it better for her to be there or for us to like arrive at her apartment?
Well, she lives at the university, but in the university like housing. So you can totally arrive at like her office, which has an adjoining like quarters, and like wake her up if you want.
Yeah, I think that works. I think we get like a couple of awkward panels of John could probably just go in. So we probably here's what we get. We get a page that has like mirrored panels of coming in that shows like John like walking in and like giving like a little wave to security guard and like going down a hallway and getting to the office with like Ramon scaling the building. And like running along a roof and jumping over a space between and then crawling in through a window.
We have to get a panel of John opening the window for him and looking out up at the night sky and seeing the black pillar of crystal and just like seeing him silhouetted against this like blue spotted like starry sky.
Beautiful.
With the dark sliver of this of the trickster's powers silhouetted next to him.
So good.
So good. It's become like a fixture of the city. Like nobody totally understands it, but it's so beautiful. Everybody just assumes it's art and they're going to leave it there. So you guys come into the university like lobby and it's dark. Nobody's there. Like the janitor is probably working, scrubbing the halls from whatever catastrophe happened during the first week of classes, which is always bad. And you're going to head toward Dr. Amari's office, which has like an adjoining living quarters. The door's shut. It has sort of that glossy, like, like textured glass so you can't see through it. But it's got her name on the door and the door's locked.
I love that there's definitely like a, like everybody waits to see like which freshman dorm is going to send someone to the hospital to get their stomach pumped first, mm-hmm. which villain's going to attack the university first, which mm-hmm. of the students is going to yeah. turn into a, is going to secretly be a villain. Like one, which of the teachers is going to secretly be a villain. Like
who's going to break into the basement and like unleash a bunch of bugs or something. Yeah. I mean, shit happens.
Which of the science classes is going to have their lab go wrong. Like it's just every yep. year. It's the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you go up to Ramon, the door and you see like her name on the etched glass.
Ramon walks up like ready to knock and then sees his reflection in the glass a little bit and then like turns and looks at John and says, maybe you should.
Yeah, sure.
She's gonna think.
He's gonna reach past him and knock on the glass.
And Ramon's gonna just like pull back enough that he's not the first thing that she sees.
Perfect. And you're going to hear like an interior door opening like further in and sort of like shuffling and mumbled like mumbled words and sort of like, you know, the shuffle of clothing and shoes. And you see a silhouette against the glass and the door is going to open like a little bit, like 2 inches. And she's going to look out and say, what happened? Who's hurt?
No one's hurt. We just have some pressing matters. Could I and my goth friend come in and talk to you really quickly? I promise we won't take too much of your time.
John, it's like 2 a.m. What are you doing? And she's going to step back and open the door for you immediately and let you in. What's happened? And she like takes her robe and like wraps it around herself, and she's got her hair. She has like long dark hair and it's like in a braid. She clearly was asleep and you just woke her up for whatever this is, but you've worked together so often in the past. Yeah. She assumes it's something. And who is
you got a lead?
I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm Crosswind. I used to be Windshear. But not that one. The new one.
No, the little, yeah, you know, I remember you.
The little one?
No.
You know how?
There's a bit, you know.
You know how we were trying to work on finding a way to get, like, find a way to get back, get him back to the past or his past or something like that? Like, we made a breakthrough, but we need your help.
Okay.
We don't understand any of it.
Yeah, and she's going to take her hand out and start, like, rubbing her eyes, like, trying to, like, get herself awake. She goes, let me go get, I'm going to go get some coffee, and I will, I'll be right back. Make yourself at home. Have a seat.
Coffee sounds great.
Great, I'll be right back.
How are you going to drink coffee? You won't take your mask off.
She's going to walk away during this.
Sounds going to, like, nudge and
oh,
be like,
no, I won't be able,
you just, how?
I can't, I won't be okay. able to. Oh my, I'm, and he's like kind of like whispering, like whisper shouting through the door, like, never mind, I can't.
And she's going to push the door open and she has like a tray with 3 cups of coffee on it and like cream and sugar. And they're like really nice little like coffee cups that are clearly part of a set that she has taken nice care of. And she's like very hospitable bringing this tray out and she sets it in front of you. She sits sort of on the edge of her desk, like really informally, and holds her coffee and she's like, okay, what do you need?
John is just going to down his coffee like in one go and then like just black and then start like neatly taking Windshear's coffee and mixing in cream and sugar and stuff and then start drinking that one more slowly.
Okay.
Okay, so we need to, so before, we figured something out. I need to make 2 jumps. And I know you, time travel isn't exactly your thing, but
it's not really time travel maybe as much as like dimension hopping.
Hmm. And where are these 2 jumps?
And he starts like moving through the binder and like this is enough that he can understand.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to go here first and we need to kill this guy in a suit.
Stop him.
And then
and like
yeah that one. And then we need to get to here and save everybody.
Mm. Can I see that? And she like holds out her hand for the her open hand for the binder.
Yeah, and Crosswind gives it away easily.
Okay, so she's going to start to like flip through, and she gets to the folder with all the code, and she takes out like the chunk of papers and starts reading through them as if she can read them, as if they're words. And she starts looking through, and she said, "Is this the first place you need to go? Because this isn't a necessarily a place, and this doesn't appear to be a person. I think it's an object."
Okay.
It looks like a clock.
Yeah, there's like a.
Yeah, it's his watch.
Hmm.
There's like a thing that carries it, though.
Yeah, it looks like looks like these are coordinates to an object in the universe, which is strange. And she's like very interested at this point, so she's gonna set down her coffee and walk around her desk, sit down and put her glasses on, and she starts to like really look through the code. And she's like, "Are you trying to find this? Because we can work with this."
See?
We can work with
Amari,
this.
I always bring you the coolest stuff.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. I mean, I don't want to get y'all excited, but I've been, you know, since we've started this journey together, and I've known how it's important to you, and I thought it might be useful to kind of start exploring potential hopping mechanisms and the...
Because it's all just energy.
Right, of course. Let me show you something. And she's going to slip on her slippers and go out of her office door with the binder and the chunk of papers. And you just invite you to follow her. And she kind of goes into the lab where there's a... closet with a big chunk of locks on it. It's like a lot of locks. And she starts to undo the locks and put in her key code. And clearly whatever is behind the store has a lot of security. She goes in there and it's full of all kinds of bits and pieces, computers and all kinds of weird gadgets. And she takes you to something in the corner with a sheet over it. And you're going to walk up to it. She takes the sheet off. And it looks like a tube that maybe a person could go in. With like, remember like a gyroscope, like something that spins in multiple directions around it? That's what it kind of looks like. And she's like, "I've been tinkering with this and trying to modify it to help us with this jumping situation. I don't have it exactly figured out yet, but it has sent some subjects to the correct location. I haven't been able to get them back because they're all non-sentient test subjects, but I can confirm that they did make it to their location some of the time."
You sent Rupert through the thing?
Well, I mean, John, you have to understand you can't get attached to the lab animals.
He was such a good bunny.
He was, and I'm sure he's very happy in 1926.
Oh, I can't believe you sent Rupert to 1926. To 1926. Sorry, why would you do... I didn't even get to say goodbye.
Well, maybe someday you'll see him again.
Don't wish that on me.
In any case...
I don't want to go to the past. Listen, no offense, Ramon, but like... A couple days was enough.
She's like rubbing her forehead. You woke her up at 2 a.m. and now you're yelling at her about a bunny that she like disappeared months ago.
They don't have cell phones back then. Like, people can't live like that.
So she's going to start talking to...
Have a real conversation.
She starts talking to Crosswind because John has gone off on his emotional disaster journey.
This is too much. This is the love.
She's like, "You took my bunny." So what you have here are coordinates.
Yeah.
If we input these, I think I can make sense of them in a way that we could try to get something there. I haven't tested the Sun People yet. I'm not confident that I would like to. But we can work on it, and maybe in a couple of years we'll be in a position to...
Years?
Yeah, we're no... It's so risky right now. I can't put you in danger. I'm a teacher. I can't put you, a student, in danger like that. But
I'm not technically a student. I've got my GED. I've got my GED in my old world and this world also. Double GED, not one of your students, strictly speaking. So maybe you could.
She's going to look at John and say, I can't. But here's what you need. And she's going to like circle it in red. It looks like if you can get to this thing and get rid of it, this might be a solution for you. But I can't be a part of this. And then she's going to like lay it out open on the desk with the big circle in it. And she's going to scribble on a post-it note and put it on the binder and go over into a cabinet and grab like this little, I'm going to say it looks like one of the Power Rangers Transformer things. It's like this like square thing with a circle in the middle and like a button on it. And she's going to stick it with the post-it note in the binder. And she's just going to walk away with her hands up and she's like, I'm not involved. And she's going to walk away and shut the door behind her.
I'll go.
Yeah. No. No, you cannot.
I made
go.
You a promise that I would help you get back there, that I would use all of the powers I had. And I didn't do it fast enough. And I mean, now I can't, but I can because I can. I know how this stuff works probably better than you do. I worked with Amari for a year and like I owe you one. Like I'll go.
No, that's not why. It's not because I'm not sitting here going that you're not hero enough, that you're not smart enough, that you're not capable enough. Of course you are. John, you're a hero. You saved me. You gave me this chance to go back, even before now. And I'm saying you can't go because if push comes to shove and we get there, either one of us, it might be that we don't have the opportunity to come back. So if you go, then I'll never know if you got it. If I go, then I can just be gone. And if I can make the second jump, great, I make the second jump. But if not, if I don't know if you ever took out the end, then I can't do the next step. So it's got to be me.
Is this a weakness? It could be shift labels because you're saying he's a hero. He's not enough of a hero and you respect him. It could be a weakness to provoke because me. You're like, oh, God, he could be trying to provoke you. It could be a lot of that was a good speech. Okay.
You know what I think it is? Huh? I've got a move for this. When you give a speech on morality and heroism, you can provoke someone with savior instead of superior.
Go for it. So
is it that?
Why don't you use your move, White Knight?
White Knight? Yeah. That is 7 on the dice plus my 3 savior. Thank you, John. That's a 10. So if you let me go, then we add one team to the pool. And if you don't, you mark a condition.
Is there a way we could both go? Like, can we make this thing fit 2 people?
Yes.
We're friendly.
Yes. You would have to get pretty tight in there. But it was built for, and I'm going to say this kindly, it was built for like a stereotypical gold era hero.
Yeah.
Like muscles, cape, bigness.
Yeah, I'm not that.
So you two, could definitely fit in there together. It'll be close. But the way you run the machine at this point is unclear. So you're going to have to look through the note that she left you to see if it can be operated from within the machine. Because normally one person runs it, one person goes, or one object goes.
Okay.
Why don't you figure out how we can run this from inside the machine, and I'll figure out how to like input the coordinates.
Sounds good. So Ramon grabs like the note, because it was the coordinates are separate from the note. So he grabs the note and he grabs the little Power Ranger. He grabs the little button device and moves to go inside of the object, like the transporter.
Mm-hmm. And you see that the little Power Ranger thing has like some dials on it. And if you start to play with them, they come up with coordinate numbers. So you can dial in the circled numbers that she wrote. And then there's a, underneath the like number panel where you see the numbers change when you're playing with the dials, underneath that is a timer and it says 12. So it's like 12.00.00. So it looks like a timer of some sort. And like what would be the hour column says 12.
And then does the note give any indication how to use it or not really?
The note says be back when the timer's up.
Okay, so Ramon looks at the button and like at the device and then looks up at John like through the transporter and goes, oh, it's on here. I think we can both use it.
Cool. So while he's looking at that, remind me, is this like a three-ring binder?
Yeah. Like a white three-ring binder.
Is it plausible that, there's like all this like random code stuff that I can't read. But when Amari was looking through it, it was like two distinct coordinates, right? Like there's, like she said it was two places.
So the digital code is the object. It's a coordinate to the object.
Okay.
You know where the second jump is. It's to April 4th, 1958, the day that...
Is there a coordinate in this book that like helps us point to that?
No, but there is a way for you to input a date on the dial instead of a coordinate. Like you can switch a switch from like you would do from like Fahrenheit to Celsius on a thermometer. There's a switch to go from coordinates to time.
Okay. 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 So yeah, I guess I leave it switched to the coordinates and start typing in the code to point us towards this thing.
As you start putting in the coordinates, you hear like a whoosh, 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 and you hear it sort of start to power up and turn on. And it starts to light up and glow.
And like fade out a little bit and then come back and then like fade out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's powering up slowly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a blue spinning light on top.
Sure.
Yeah.
Are you guys inside the thing together now?
Yeah. Oh, before we do that, while it's like starting to power up, John is going to like grab his like take off. He's going to take off his hoodie and he's just kind of got like a regular, like, I don't know. He's got like a dark brown polo shirt on underneath because he just doesn't want the like extra, weight or whatever distraction of the full polo, hoodie. And he drops his backpack on the table and he unzips it. And he starts pulling out pieces of like this thing and like clicking them together. And when he's done, he's got this like big rifle that has this like gnarly looking like four pronged hook thing in the front. It kind of looks like a grappling hook. And he puts the hoodie in the backpack, zips it up, sets it on the ground, and turns back to Ramon holding this big gun.
What the hell is that?
I'm not a superhero anymore, but I'm not stupid.
That's going to make it a lot tighter.
Yeah, but I'm not going without it.
Okay. Come on over here, buddy.
It. And I walk
so
over.
You like, yeah, you squeeze in, I assume, back to back.
No. They have to hug.
Yeah, Ramon is kind of like, he tries to like pull back a little bit to get out of the way, but kind of can't. Yeah. And so he just kind of like ends up hooking his arm around John's shoulder. Uh-huh. And like they have to like basically cuddle in together like that with like their sides are mostly against each other to give space to John's giant rifle.
And John is going to like, I think they're kind of like pressed chest to chest. Are they pressed chest to chest?
Oh, yeah.
And he's just going to kind of like whisper in Ramon's ear, like, I'm so glad you chose to wear this whole full body suit all the time. At least none of my skin has to touch any of your skin.
And Ramon's just mask, like just like looking up at John with like its weird like blank expression and just like the dead black eyes in it. This is much better.
The panel like that the readers see is like if Crosswind sort of slightly tilted his head down, it would be laying on John's chest in a very tender way.
Yeah.
It's just this side of adorable. You're right there. And who's going to push the button?
I think you've got the thing.
Yeah. All right. So if we get there and things are going sideways right away, stay behind me, okay? Yeah.
We'll get there. We'll get the thing. We'll come back here. We'll find a way to destroy it. And then we'll do what we have to do.
Perfect. Thank you. Click.
So the thing starts to whoosh, 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 whoosh around you and buzz and flicker. And as previously discussed, this thing has never been tested on a human.
And definitely not on two humans.
Doesn't always work. So there is a roll with this that I will leave it up to you, whoever wants to make it. It is a roll plus savior.
Good news.
Probably me.
Yeah, guess what I have too. We both have three savior.
Do you?
It's perfect.
That's awesome.
I've been slowly turning him into me.
Do you want to roll one die and I'll roll one die?
Okay.
Aww.
All right, we'll each roll one die.
Oh, good news.
I rolled a 3.
I rolled a 5. Okay.
So we've got an 8
5,
plus 3.
8 plus 3, 11.
Nice.
On a 10 plus, and for the record, I didn't know what your savior was, so this worked out really well. On a 10 plus, you go where you want.
Nice.
So you are going to kind of swoop through this like swirling color vortex kind of thing. It is almost kind of like what happened when you left 1958, except that was more of a nothing, and this is more of a colorful nothing.
It's beautiful.
But it's really pretty. It's like an inside of an opal.
John would definitely look around and just be like, they should have sent a poet. And then look to Ramon to see.
Yep, they sent us instead.
He just shakes his head because Ramon doesn't get the reference.
As you sort of come through this like swirling color tunnel, you abruptly land on a white, hard surface. And the machine starts to power down. Whoosh, 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 whoosh. And Crosswind, if you look down at your Power Ranger thing, on the little timer thing, there's 3 rows of numbers, and in where the minute numbers would be, it says 12. So it's like 00, 12, 00. And then it starts to count down like 11:59.
Hey, have you got pockets?
Yeah, of course.
Do you mind taking this?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. I just realized this thing doesn't have pockets.
You designed the perfect costume and it didn't have pockets?
I mean, I ordered most of it online.
Yeah, you can buy things with pockets online now.
The door is going to like swivel open in front of you, and you guys are going to like spill out and kind of get your bearings.
Okay.
So this is a hilarious scene. So the panel is a full page, and you are in like a white bank-looking place. It's like a long white marble corridor with big columns and high fancy ceilings, and in front of you is a long line of figures in white robes with like their hoods up, and they're talking to each other, and like you can see their faces. They're like cloaks, almost like what you would see in like a church or something. It's more of a formal thing, and the two of you get out of this machine. John is in his brown polo and jeans, and Crosswind is in his full-on uniform costume. You stick out like a pair of like zombies.
Yeah. I'm also holding a large rifle with a weird
large big gun. And you just arrived in this weird machine. They don't seem to notice you right now because the room is very long. They're kind of far away. But there's no blending happening here. No, if you approach this group, they're going to acknowledge you.
Is this a bank?
I don't know. I don't know.
Kind of looks like a bank.
I don't know if I've ever been to a bank. People go to banks still?
Yeah, to cash your check every week. You bring your paycheck to the bank.
You
sign it. They deposit it.
I mean, I...
Have you never had a job?
I'm like 15.
And suddenly a young woman comes rushing up to you, and she's like, she's not in one of the capes. She's in like a capelet. It's like a short little white goofy looking cape over a black and white suit.
Capelets are perfect.
Yeah.
And she's got like her hair tied back in a bun, and she runs up to you with a clipboard, and she goes, name?
Crosswind.
And she doesn't even look up. She just starts writing down on the clipboard, crosswind, and item you're picking up.
My watch.
Watch. Okay. And you are, sir, you're going to have to check that. Mm. And she's pointing at the gun.
And he...
No, it's fine.
He looks at it and, like, pulls some things to see that it's, like, working right. And he goes, you know, it's good. It checks
and
out.
And she looks up. She looks up in your face. She clearly does not understand your sarcasm, yeah, your joke. She's not on the same wavelength. And she goes, checked items, go over there. You'll see coat check.
Okay.
Concierge.
Yeah, sure.
At the front. If you could just... Thank you.
No, I'm going to wear it. I'm not taking it off.
You're fine. I just...
Great. Let's go get my watch.
The large item must be checked. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
He's not that tall.
She just looks at you and she just is like, am I speaking a foreign language? I don't understand why this is so hard. I'm just trying to do my job. Please, for the love of God, just take that thing and check it so I don't get in trouble. But you don't hear any of that. No. That's all in her eyes.
Yeah.
And she says, Mr. Wind, I will put your watch on the log. You feel free to get in line. Perfect. And she clip-clops away.
Okay. I'm definitely not checking the gun.
I
think not in any world.
Not in any world, but definitely not in a weird dimensional bank world. Yeah, Crosswind just kind of like, Crosswind looks around for a second as though he's like trying to take things in and figure out a plan, and then just like walks over to the line. He tries to put his hands in his pocket and stand like all 1950s cool dude, but he has no pocket.
So your hands are just sort of like cupping your hips.
He like his hand like moves down to the pocket a couple times and just like misses and slides along leather until he just stops and crosses his arms.
Cool. John waits for that to like all go down and just like, and then walks over. I don't know if this line doesn't not seem like it's moving very fast, and we're on a clock, we're on the time.
True. Yeah, there's probably like 20 people ahead of you, and they don't seem to be in any hurry.
I tap the person in front of me.
And they're gonna turn around, and it's this person with like white spiky hair and bright blue eyes, like ice blue eyes, and very pale skin. And they're going to turn to you and say, yes?
Crosswind's just going to lean in as close as possible and like just like get his face up as close as he can and go, let me cut you in line.
Sure. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
And he steps ahead and he taps the person in front of him.
John's just like, I'm so sorry. And steps up in front of this person.
And you actually get in front of two people because he was talking to somebody and they want to continue their conversation. Yeah. So they just sort of like part and let you go. And they stand behind you and resume their conversation. They're not bothered.
Cool. Tap, tap, tap.
And they're going to turn around, and this person is an insect on the front.
Ugh.
Like, their face is a bug. It's, like, the two big eyes and, like, the little pincher mouth. But they turn to you and say, yes.
Let me cut you in line.
Oh, okay, if you insist. And she sort of shuffles behind you. She actually goes to the back of the line. She clearly doesn't understand how this works, and she's going to go get behind the other two you've already cut. And
I've got pretty much one strategy until it stops working.
John is like, he is learning the wrong lesson here. These people are... He's gonna come away from this thinking that this is the way to make stuff work, and he just doesn't know how to stop it.
So let's
and like after like a couple of them, he turns to John and goes like, "These people are really nice.
Maybe you should stop telling them you want to cut them."
Is this Nebraska
line? I mean,
so
it could be.
Let's say that there's like a 2-page spread of all these little baby panels of with Crosswind threatening each member. Each person in the line.
Ooh,
and then complete
it's one of those like there's like a little box around it's like around the edge of the page with all the different people, and there's just one bubble in the middle of the page that says let me cut you in line.
I love it. And they're all just like super not bothered by you. They just let you go and you make it up to the front. There is what looks like a bank window with like a teller hole. There's only one, which explains why this line is going so slowly. And you go up to the teller and they have a large log book, and it looks like tons and tons of storage and containment behind them. But you walk up to the desk and the person there is in one of the capelets over the suit, and they're sitting there with their large book.
As we're coming up, Ramon is saying to John, "Usually you have to wait in the lines. This is a great bank."
I still don't understand, like, what could you do here that you can't do, like, on a website?
You can take money out.
But I can do that on a website. I don't even need to touch money. I have a credit card. I have, like...
And as you guys are having this discussion, you edge yourself up to the desk, and the person behind the desk just looks up at you, and he has... no time for your bullshit, and he just looks up at you, and he's like, "Name?
Crosswind.
Wind, yes. Watch, is it? Can you describe the watch, and when did you deposit it?"
It's a kind of purple band on it.
Mm.
And, it's, we brought the binder, right?
I don't know that we did. Yes, of course we did. Why would we not bring the binder with us?
We might not have brought the binder. It might not make sense for us to have brought the binder. I feel like we didn't.
I don't think we brought the binder.
May I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
You see, like, a bunch of paper. He has, like, stacks of papers behind the desk and some writing utensils. You could maybe draw him a picture.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, yes, this is perfect. So Ramon, like... grabs a piece of paper, just, like, reaches across, grabs a piece of paper because he does not know how to not look like he's robbing a bank.
And the man just, like, sort of watches this happen. Yeah, the man just sort of watches this happen and is just perplexed. He's not scared or mad. He's just like, huh, that hasn't ever happened.
And he's, like, trying to draw it. He's not a very good artist.
Yeah. It was more like this. Like, those were a little longer and there was more numbers.
Didn't it have, like a little button on the side or
yeah, but
like
a twisty thing? There was another one over here too, though.
Yeah, it might also be under the end. I go by both. But look, it looked like purple and numbers on it and like this.
I think it destroys universes.
Yeah,
I am not, I don't look at these items. I just need to know when it was deposited, but I may be able to look through the archive. Give me 1 second. And he takes out a large book, and it's like 6 phone books thick.
Hoo boy. So last deposited.
What about last taken out?
April 4th, 1959.
Okay, and he takes like a huge chunk of pages and flops it open and starts going down the list, and he says April 4th, withdrawal. Yes, I have here end watch gold.
Mm, that's the one.
There it is. That's the one. Yeah.
Can I see some identification?
Yeah, absolutely. Crosswind holds his hands out to the side and begins to just like bring huge billowing bursts of air around him, like just like hurtling wind around, and goes, "I am the end."
And it's gonna like blow him in the face, and he's not gonna really react. It's just sort of like an inconvenient like gust of wind in his face, and his hair kind of goes straight back, and he goes, "Okay, Mr. End, I will be right back." And he casually, slowly, not with any urgency, gets up, walks back to these rows and rows of containers. You see him like 30 feet back, get a ladder, climb the ladder, find a box, open the box, and pull out a small watch box. He's gonna lock the
that's
box.
That's the one. That's mine.
Make yep. a note.
John is like tapping his foot and like tapping on the counter and
he's
touching his
registering the withdrawal and climbing down the ladder and walking back toward you. And he sits down at the desk with the box and he's writing it in the big book. And he says, "Here, sign here, please." And he turns the big book to you to sign for the withdrawal.
How are we on time? Have we got plenty of time, or are we like really, really short on time?
Maybe you've got like 3 minutes left.
Can I reach the clock, the watch?
Where's the box? It's on the desk. You could grab it if you wanted.
Okay.
You shouldn't because it's rude, but it's there.
And how long do we think it takes? Like how? Like we're near the thing, or we need to like move back to it because we got like you said
you,
that we got
you
like,
just
3 minutes.
To. Yeah, you have to run back to the. To the thing.
You sign. Okay. John will just be like, "You sign, I'll go get it started."
Ramon cold cocks the guy.
Wait.
And grabs the watch and runs, grabbing onto John's hand.
Oh, no.
And he falls down. He has never once been struck in his weird life. And you hit him and he falls and there's like a clank as the chair he's sitting on hits the marble floor. And as you start to run, people slowly start to realize what you've done. And they all turn to you as you're running. And as you're getting towards the back, they realize that you've brought violence into this neutral space. And they're going to come after you. So you have just angered this entire line of people. The threats to cut them in line did nothing, but the punching the guy has angered them.
I just felt like there wasn't enough time.
Clearly, yeah. And when Windshear thinks not enough time, punch things. So they are all going to start to converge on you. No, they're not running, but they're going to come address this situation that you have brought upon yourself. So you are getting a convergence of 20-ish people in white robes following, surrounding you at this point. They're like 10 to 20 feet away because you ran and they're not running, but they're coming.
Get the machine going. John's going to start like typing in, like he's switching it over to time and typing in our date from the time we left. And we're going to get in and hug again.
And the door's going to shut. And they're just going to surround you in like a circle, but they're not going to get close enough to get hit by this gyrating thing. But the last thing you see before you leave this white bank place is this group of judging faces staring at you as you go.
I'm so sorry.
And the last thing you see is a circle of judging faces with white capes as you get sucked back into the void.
You turn to the last page of the comic and find a page of letters to the editor. Do you have questions or comments? Send your letters in written or short audio format to letters@protean.city. We'll publish a few each issue with a response from our editors. Bizarre in the Bash writes, "Dear Protean City, the recent arc with the merfolk in Protean City was really interesting. I was wondering if other heroes in Protean City have encountered the merfolk, and could you recommend any back issues we should look into? Thanks for the letter, Bizarre. While this is the first time we've seen Merfolk appear in a mainline Protean City comic, this isn't the first time they've had their existence hinted at. I believe it was an old issue of The Uncrackable Crawdad, where in a fight with Kraken, some ancient ruins were unearthed. I'd recommend going back to the issues around that and just following it, and taking a closer look at some of the symbols on the broken stone structures. I hope that answers your question, and keep reading Protean City Comics.
Protean City Comics is a production of the Stop, Hack, and Roll podcast network. It is produced and edited by James Malloy. This episode was emceed by me, Elspeth Denman, and I can be found on Twitter at The Cat on the Wall. Puck is played by James Malloy, who can be found on Twitter at And the Meltdowns. Windshear is played by Brandon Leon Gambetta, who can be found on Twitter at Dr. Captain Cobalt. The introduction is voiced by Peter DiGilio. All music was composed by Jim Malloy. Masks, A New Generation, is a game by Brendan Conway and published by Magpie Games. This podcast is created thanks to the financial support of backers at patreon.com/stophackandroll. Join us on our Discord at discord.stophackandroll.com. Follow us on Twitter at Protean City and on Instagram at Protean City Comics. Subscribe to Protean City Comics on iTunes or anywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Wednesday to find out what thrilling adventures lie ahead.